Welcome to Real Geeks. I'm Crash and Burn, and with me, as always, is Mike Montgomery.
Hey, hey.
And this is a very special bonus episode. Yeah, that's right. Two shows in 1 week. Can you handle all of this realness?
This movie especially, and things are at, oh, there's stuff that needs to be said. screw our schedule. This, oh, there are things that have to be discussed.
It had to be done. But first, real news. Samuel Jackson has had enough of these motherfucking critics and their motherfucking hate of Marvel films. The man, the myth, the legend himself spoke recently on The View to defend the MCU and comic book movies, often the easy target of both online reviewers and an easy way to boost attention for directors with upcoming releases, saying, quote, "Movies are movies. These are movies that I want to see when I was a kid, and the artistry of making a movie is something that was a mystery for so long. Making movies is no longer a mystery. Kids know how to do it with their phones, so it's easy for filmmakers to dismiss it, only because people aren't going to see their film." Martin Scorsese has yet to have released a response. Oh, shots fired, though.
Well, I like, on the one hand, yes, shots fired, but at the same time, though, is he really wrong?
Oh, he is not wrong whatsoever.
No!
He is not wrong whatsoever. I just like that someone of his like caliber and his aggression has come out and just been like, you know what? You're just upset because kids don't want to see your fucking old movie about Robert De Niro again. Just, ah, oh, such a
brute. It's like, I'm sorry, but all the respect in the world to Martin Scorsese for everything that he has contributed to film.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, is anyone under the age of 45 going to see The Irishman?
Right? And watch it and you realize that you're watching, like, it's a 70-something-year-old man pretending to be a 30-year-old. There is a great scene in The Irishman that completely, like, it kind of points to Martin Scorsese misunderstanding why he's out of touch. And it's Robert De Niro. He's supposed to be in his, like, early 30s, and he's beating the hell out of this guy, like, that owed him money. But he's moving like an old man, slowly kicking this guy and, like, shuffling along. And it's like, this is hilarious. This scene is comedy, but supposed to be how brutal he is. Martin Scorsese has lost the plot.
So basically in this scene, he's Liam Neeson from Taken 3.
He is Liam Neeson the hell out of it. We need 26 shots to get him over this fence. Go!
I don't know if you've heard about this, but apparently there is like a 10-hour cut on YouTube of that fence scene.
Oh my god. That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Twink on twink violence news, as Dune 2 has found its Fade Rautha in Austin Butler, who is set to appear in Baz Luhrmann's upcoming Elvis Presley biopic, along with Florence Pugh as Princess Irulan. Villeneuve's second outing in Frank Herbert's neo-feudal future is set to release in 2023, and I, for one, will spend the entire time going in and out of hallucinations of Zendaya in the desert until opening night.
Amen to that. Villeneuve's first Dune, for me, it's up there with The Dark Knight in terms of films that I will only ever watch in a theater.
I completely understand. Yeah, as someone who saw it in a theater, completely fucking understand that.
Yeah, I refuse to experience the movie any other way.
I watched it with two people who had never seen any Dune, never read Dune, and I think I was giggling throughout, and they were just like, What is happening? Why is this so slow? What the fuck? And I'm just like, yeah, they did the thing. Oh my god, it's so beautiful. I was a kid in a candy store, and then there was Zendaya, so I was happy. As with everything that is successful and good in the modern world, Zendaya. The second Star Trek renaissance continues with confirmation that J.J. Abrams' Kelvinverse, starring Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, and Zoe Saldana, will be back for a fourth installment, and that is all that we know. Set to be in theaters, though, next Christmas. We know that the main cast will return, with the exception, of course, of Anton Yelchin, who died tragically in 2016. Yeah. And there's nods to WandaVision's Mark Shackman to direct, but there are precious little other details, including, we presume it is not the previous Star Trek IV plot, where Kirk goes back in time and meets Chris Hemsworth playing his dad. This seems, it seems like they're going to go Star Trek No Way Home, and the Kelvin timeline is going to start intersecting with other timelines in a more aggressive way that will kind of allow them to tie it up without killing them off.
If the story for this movie is not a time travel story, I will not accept that, because it will then go against my core belief for the entire Kelvin universe, which is that every single movie has to connect to its counterpart in the main timeline in some way.
I can say, and every fourth Star Trek film has to be about whales and time travel.
Oh yeah, no, I've said it before and I'll say it again. The first movie, Nero's ship is basically V'ger.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek II and Into Darkness, self-explanatory. The Enterprise blows up in both third movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the fourth one needs to be a time travel movie. And the fifth one, we need to finally find out what God needs with the starship.
Yep, yep. And then the sixth one, we're just gonna blow up Kronos again. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It happens like once a century.
But also, I do have a question about this story, which is, has Paramount finally told the cast that they're doing this fourth movie?
They have told the cast that they are doing it. They have not told the cast when, how, where, how much money they are getting paid for it. But the cast has been told that they are doing this. And I believe that is the exact assertion of contractually, you are doing this fucking film.
Because, well, like, I ask this specifically because I do remember on Facebook stumbling across an article which was basically the agents for the main cast going, yeah, Paramount announced this without even talking to us.
That's just typical Paramount when it comes to Star Trek, though. They don't know if they're coming, going, hate it, love it. Oh, it's our flagship property. We better cancel it all and never show another until a decade from now when we do six fucking shows at once.
But at the same time, though, can you just imagine being an actor's agent and going into negotiation knowing that the studio now needs to sign you?
Yeah. Are you really going to do this film without Zachary Quinto or Zoe Saldana or Chris Pine? Are you really? I think you should be giving me all of the money.
Yeah.
All of it.
I don't know if you've heard about AMC and the ticket prices for the Batman.
No.
Apparently, there's a lot of details here that I don't know, but apparently AMC Theaters down in the States is trying an experiment where they've raised the ticket prices on the Batman, and only on the Batman, by $1.50.
Oh, that's brutally evil.
I heard about this just yesterday when I was listening to an episode of Double Toast, and it was like, there is a way that you could justify this, but the fact that it's only on the one movie that you know good and goddamn well everyone is going to go see.
Yeah. Premium pricing. Sweet Jesus. I am afraid.
Like, and I can see the business logic, because you look at how COVID basically, let's be honest, nearly killed the theater business. But maybe you should have tried that on all blockbuster movies, because the fact that you're targeting this one film specifically is the fact is that that's the thing to me that makes AMC look downright critical.
Yeah.
Or criminal, I should say.
And also kind of like, I get the immediate feeling that someone number crunched what would have happened if they just upped tickets to Spider-Man No Way Home by $1.50, and they're like, look how many more millions of dollars we would have made. And it's like, let's do that for the next big thing. we can't be sure, obviously, that the Batman's going to be the biggest thing. But I get the feeling that that is someone who number crunched, for some reason, $1.50 extra onto Spider-Man per ticket. And they looked at that number and went, well, why can't we have that?
Okay, it's a clear-cut money grab, and like I said, allegedly this is something that theaters over in Europe have started doing. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they didn't do it quite this way.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I can understand if I'm going to a special-ass performance of something, but really, for just... I'm going into the same normal-ass theater. This isn't 3D. It's not... Like, you know, it's not one of those ones where you get the extra comfy seats and they give you a turkey dinner or something. I'm just watching the fucking film on the same screen where I saw, like, Paul Blart Mall Cop. Which, no, to be clear, listener, I did not fucking pay money for.
No.
Disney Pixar are back for another animated classic coming-of-age story with Turning Red, the story of Mei Mei, a young teenager living in turn-of-the-millennium Toronto who has to come to terms with family tradition and expectation, puberty, and the realities of the modern Western adolescent experience. Starring Rosalie Chiang, Sandra Oh, Ava Morris, Maitreyi Ramakrishnan, James Hong, and many others, and directed by Domi Shi, about a young girl who wakes up one morning to discover she has turned into a giant red panda, the result of an ancient curse on the women in her family, and she and her friends have to find a way to first hide, then exploit her newfound fuzziness to pay for tickets to a boy band show, 4Town, while navigating a complex and increasingly strained relationship with her mother, expectations, and honoring their shared heritage. And each other.
Yeah.
It's a family movie from Pixar. Who the fuck could have predicted that? Who knows where it could go? Who knows how it could possibly turn out? Well, apparently Sean O'Connor at Cinema Blend did, and Mike, you've got words to say about that.
Oh, I mean, first and foremost, if you are a white male film critic, or a white male film goer, because of this guy, you probably owe Brie Larson an apology.
That's the funny thing is, the first time I heard about this controversy, it was the hashtag Brie Larson was right, and it's like, what are we talking about here? What's going on?
It's like, Brie Larson tried to warn us about exactly this in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
The entire perception of Brie Larson hates white dudes, yada yada yada, is built around her speech at an awards ceremony, where she used that speech to almost literally warn us about exactly this review.
Yeah.
And again, review, air quotes.
Yeah. Personal airing of shittiness. Probably. So yeah, Cinema Blend's Sean O'Connell called the film, quote, limiting, and complained that he couldn't personally relate to it, therefore it had no value. Since the fuck when is that how art works? You think that a senior editor at Cinema Blend would know better.
Taking out the inherent racism of his comments? Just in terms of straight up logical, unemotional film criticism. What he wrote was wrong in every way conceivable. Like, from a personal standpoint, I had mentioned in our review of The Batman how, like, I watch a lot of the CW shows, and I watch Supergirl. I enjoy Supergirl. I am as far from the intended target audience of Supergirl as one could possibly get. And still found things that I could connect with, found things that I enjoyed. The Carmilla web series and the Carmilla movie. Again, in terms of the target audience, I'm about four cities that way.
Not only did you enjoy it, you literally brought it to us to be shared out of that, like, pure love of the property that technically isn't for you.
No!
And yet, somehow, you managed to enjoy it. Now, when you broke this law of the universe, which apparently Sean O'Connell has never considered before, did it take any effort to give a shit about someone that wasn't you? Is empathy something you have to attempt intentionally, or does it just come natural to this species called humanity?
Oh yeah, no effort whatsoever.
Like the amount of work that would have had to go into to consider and then write and then edit and then publish that article without someone being like, maybe you're just being an asshole. It's impressive, actually. And on so many levels, I don't understand why he did, unless it is purely to generate traffic to the site, which that can be legit these days. That's probably why anyone does anything, is to generate traffic to their site. But, like, what do you mean that you didn't find anything personally relatable? Does he... So if he sat down and watched the classic Stephen King horror Carrie, is that unrelatable? Because it's also about a teenage girl going through adolescence and her relationship with her mom. And this is literally Carrie if at some point her mom and her actually connected as a family. That's the only difference. They're both about, like, extraordinary things happening to represent puberty. That extraordinary thing either is accepted or rejected by those around them. And in Carrie, it is rejected soundly. In this, it is accepted. And you end up with a Pixar film. If this motherfucker can't get behind Carrie, I can understand why he can't get behind this. But I get the feeling he understands Carrie perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah. It just like I said, just the basic lack of logic. Like there were two things he wrote, which is... I recognize the humor in the film, but connected with none of it. Okay, fine. Humor is subjective, not for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very specific to maybe growing up in Ontario in 2000 era. I went to high school in Ontario in 2000. This all seems very relevant and familiar to me. I was literally in that level of school. She was 2 years below me.
Like, this second quote that I have here is, by rooting Turning Red very specifically in the Asian community of Toronto, the film legitimately feels like it was made for Domi Shi's friends and immediate family members, which is fine, but also a tad limiting in its scope. Okay, wait a second here. So, this guy wants me to believe that a multi-billion dollar animation studio like Pixar is going to give this filmmaker loads of money to make a film for her and her friends.
Yeah, and that's it. It's not what? It couldn't possibly be seen as marketable to anyone else. I mean, Canadians, that's not a market.
Cinema Blend themselves, in a tweet, puts out, We failed to properly edit this review, and it never should have gone up. Oh. No shit.
Oh.
We have unpublished it and assigned to someone else. We have also added new levels of editorial oversight. Thank you to everyone who spoke up. If I may paraphrase the earlier mentioned Samuel L. Jackson, motherfucker, you're sorry you got caught.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. That... They pushed it out thinking that he was just gonna, like, douche bro his way through it. And they didn't expect the repercussions. Oh, how delicious is that? How delicious. And now, thanks to that really terrible, stupid review that no one except for the worst people on Earth agree with, Pixar Disney has free press. The people who do not need it have infinite amounts of morally justified free press right when they need morally justified free press because of other political things that they have been doing. Cinema Blend, Sean O'Connell. That's the funny thing. I've seen one conspiracy resulting from this, and it's a claim that he was paid by Disney to be a piece of shit to clear the air so that they could, like, distance themselves from other controversies. And it's like, wow, when it reaches the point that your only options for your reputation are you are a piece of shit yourself or you are a paid piece of shit, maybe it's time to take a moment.
Oh yeah, because it's like, yes, Disney paid to make this happen. Like how every positive Marvel review was bought by Disney. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They pay everyone except for us. It's a good film. It's like it's a Pixar film. The way I look at Pixar films is like the Disney, the classic Disney animated films, like, you know, the Snow White up to like Treasure Island. Those classics. Not every film is necessarily geared for every audience, but there is something for everyone in not only every film, but there's like a film for everyone. You will find something that you're like, ah, there's the one I like. That one is for me. I can respect the rest. I can revel in the one I have. For me, this is the first Pixar film I've seen since WALL-E, just because that's the last Pixar film that spoke to me as a complete, like, fucking sci-fi geek. That's what I wanted. That's what I got. Yeah. And now I've seen this one, and I'm like, yeah, it's not necessarily for me. I may not watch it again, but I can see that it has all that Pixar magic. I can see that there's the quality. I can see the richness. I can see that it is a love letter to Domichi's childhood and her family and her heritage and growing up in Toronto and her friends. The fact that it isn't the film that speaks to me doesn't rob it of any of that richness. And I don't understand how anyone could look at it as anything less than that. Because, it's like, this is a great flavor of ice cream that just isn't my favorite flavor. And that's fine. That's great. This is great.
Yeah, oh yeah, like, for me personally, as I kind of alluded to earlier, essentially, I am a white male who is kind of tired of white male stories. So if you give me a good story with a female lead, I am there. If you give me a good story with a lead of color, I am there. I may not be able to directly relate, but I am probably going to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what this kind of thing brings in. It's reaching out beyond the staid and boring audience and audience expectations to bring representation to other people. And yeah, it's such a bizarre concept that Sean O'Connell did not look at who the audience is instead of seeing who the audience isn't. and reflecting on that, because that's far more important. Who the audience isn't is everyone who doesn't see a film. Do you have any fucking clue in human history how many people that is? Who the audience is only is all that ever matters. And yeah, like it's already very successful. Word of mouth, because of this, has of course boosted it, but it was already doing fantastic. People, of course, love Pixar films, and people who have not seen themselves represented in film and culture nearly as much, of course, love it. Well, I give this film 5 members of 4 Town out of a possible 5. Pixar doesn't miss, and if you didn't like it, and you didn't feel like you're the target audience for it, you can always find another Pixar film, because that's the way Pixar films work. You didn't like it? Go watch the Pixar film that you do like, and shut the fuck up. Yeah. Help others express themselves.
Yeah, I think for me, there are certain properties where I kind of go, there's nothing directly for me here, but I'm also going, if I had a daughter. A while back, I had borrowed the Sam Meggs book, A Geek Girl's Guide to the Galaxy, from the library, like just out of curiosity, and read it, and got to the end of it. I'm going, this is obviously not for me, but if I had a daughter and she was wanting to get into geek culture, I would absolutely want her to read this. I left Captain Marvel going, if I had a daughter, I want her to have this movie. One of the pro wrestling podcasts that I listen to is called Wild On, hosted by Taylor Wilde. And it's very much like highlighting female wrestlers. And it's one of the, and again, it's, if I had a daughter and she wanted to get into wrestling, here, listen to this.
Yeah. Don't go through the toxic shit. Here is something that can actually be for you. Yeah.
And Turning Red is very much that same thing. Like, we're going to sit down, we're going to watch this.
And you'll enjoy it, and you'll come out better for it, and maybe it'll express some things that I don't know how to, or... Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, if you see a film that you don't entirely get that is clearly for another audience, don't just dismiss it. Assume that there's something there, and try to figure it out. And if it's still not for you, then that's okay. It's not everything's for everyone.
What a concept! No, exactly. Like, there may not be something directly for you, but there are conversations that could easily come out of this movie that need to happen. And as much as it would be lovely if this had gone theatrical and had as wide a release as possible, I'm kind of glad that it went to Disney Plus instead, because this is that perfect sit down with your family in front of the TV movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. Any family with like, I'd say up to like early teens, preteen, can sit down and watch this. And it doesn't matter. It's just a nice family movie. It's exactly, just a nice family movie with an awful lot of Canadian currency in it that, every time it flickered, my eye gets caught, and it's like, ah, good, programming. Yeah. Hey, $5, sweet. You just don't see Canadian money in movies much, so you notice it a lot.
Oh, yeah, like there's, like I alluded to earlier, there's so much Canadian imagery that is just so well executed here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like you can tell that the entire thing is done by someone who actually like grew up and lived in Toronto, because it's just this couldn't be more Toronto if the city of Toronto themselves had written it and had checklist of like how to make sure it practically is hitting the same checklist as Kim's Convenience, but in the same way of like, no, that's, have you been to Toronto? Have you perhaps met the Asian community in Toronto? Yeah. This is what it's like. Deal. with the exception of the giant magical red panda.
Oh yeah, and I also a credit to this movie with that is you have the absolutely stereotypical overbearing Asian parent.
Yeah.
You have by the end of the movie it's an Asian movie, so there's gotta be a kaiju fight.
Yeah.
But I
didn't even think of it as a kaiju, but it is.
But at the same time though, none of it really feels stereotypical.
No, it's coming from like a love within, not a perception without.
Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe that's just it. Maybe Sean wanted to see some exploitation, goddammit. And he didn't see it. He saw actual, like, embracing of someone's heritage. And fuck that. I want to see kaiju fights.
Right.
More kaiju fights. Bigger kaiju fights. You'd think that the kaiju at the end would have been enough.
Like, this is not a good movie because I didn't see enough of myself in it. Dumbass, it's about a 13-year-old Asian girl. If you're looking for yourself in a movie about a 13-year-old Asian girl...
Yeah.
Cinema Blend should probably be asking questions.
Or perhaps they should just hire a 13-year-old Asian girl to write articles. Like, maybe if they're going to take that approach, they should always make sure an article is written by, like, as close as the demographic of, the main of a character. So the next time when we get Dune 2, you go and find a 16-year-old aristocratic little shithead who was raised to be God's gift to the universe, and you get them to write the article. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. We have been Mike Montgomery and Crash and Burn. If you like the show, please leave a comment, like, share, and subscribe, and we will be back next week with something else.
Yeah. Hell if we know what.
And hopefully some better puns. I don't know. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.